Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. This is Veronica Monet. I am going to be talking sex. As a matter of fact, we're going to be talking women talking sex. Tonight's guest is Luminessa Injara. Isn't that just a beautiful, mystical-sounding name? Well, Luminessa actually has a pretty mystical, magical background. She's not only the co-founder of Women Talking Sex and the founder of the School of Women's Mysteries, also of soul support, but she's also a teacher of sacred sexuality, women's sexuality, and new thought metaphysics. She's been doing that for about 20 years now. Her background includes being an ordained minister, a priestess, and a certified shamanic counselor. I think we're in for a real treat this evening. As if that wasn't enough, she does soul mentoring, and she teaches tantra and spiritual metaphysics, and she's a writer for The Examiner. You can find her over at examiner.com. And her beautiful name is spelled L-U-M-I-N-E-S-S-A-S, Luminessa. And then last name, Injara, is E-N-J-A-R-A. And if you want to go over to the website right now and check out Women Talking Sex, that's just www.womentalkingsex.com. Luminessa, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thank you so much. What a lovely welcome that was.
Well, you're a lovely woman, and you're doing great work in this world. And I know this evening you and I are going to be talking about how women are sometimes controlled and I suppose contained by core shame. This is a topic that is something you and I are both very, very passionate about, so I can't wait to dig into it. But before we do, can you tell us a little bit about the Women Talking Sex Seminar? I guess, is that the teleseminar?
Yes, it's a virtual conference. So it's a telesummit or a virtual conference. And we're in our second month, and we're still young and growing. And we just started last month, and our mission and what we're really here to do is provide a sacred, or actually just a safe space and a forum for women to be able to feel like they're having a conversation with us, my co-founder, Sabrina Rojek, myself, and our guest. And in fact, you were on our show, and you will be on our show this week.
I can't wait. I'm very excited. And you're offering people some special gifts and packages, too.
We do. You know, what we're actually doing, just to give it a little bit of a distinction, we know there's lots of conferences out there and lots of wonderful people doing things, but ours is the only conference dedicated to women's sexuality. There's no other conference out there that solely provides information, education, transformation, guidance, processes, ways to connect with other people. If you're interested in, let's say you want to find someone to work with, you can listen to our show and find people that you can connect with. So we're also, makes it very unique. And we also decided to do something new, which is we're actually having just one day a week where my co-founder and I just have a conversation, just like we would if we were in your room, in your living room, about a particular topic. And we just share points of view. And that was really fun today.
Yes. Well, I found the interview with you to be really personal, too. There was nothing mechanical about it. As a matter of fact, as far as interviews go, this is actually much more conversational and interactive.
Yes, and I like that. It's much more, it's more fun and more interesting. And we want to really help women to get educated, to be able to ask questions, to feel safe, to not be shy anymore, to come out of the closet, so to speak, and be willing to just talk about sex in a really matter-of-fact way.
Yes. Now, speaking of talking about sex in a very matter-of-fact way, and especially women doing that, what do you think is one of the major barriers to that?
Well, I'm a bit of a scholar, and I love to go and do research on certain subjects, especially things that I want to teach. And so when I look deeply into the whole herstory, it's the history of where origins come from. I always go back to the origin. I really think it's partly because women have not given themselves permission enough that to really allow themselves to feel good about themselves, to feel that they can have pleasure, and to really feel that their bodies can give them pleasure and that it's okay to have it in their bodies. I feel that there's a lot of undercover and deeply hidden, core issues around body shame, sex, woman, all of it tied together. And I think it just goes back thousands of years.
I think it goes back thousands of years too, and I know there's a word that's been overused,
yes.
But certainly patriarchy, I think, overtook the goddess cultures probably about 6,000 years ago, and seems to have created a lot of sex negativity in the process. Is that your understanding? I know you do a lot of research on this topic.
Well, I like Rhianne Eisler's terminology better. It's called a male-dominated culture. Because
uh-huh.
If we really look at patriarchy or matriarchy, if you look up those words, it means father or mother. And we don't live in a father-dominated culture. We live in a male-dominated culture. So she uses it as male dominion or male domination. And I feel that that's more accurate, I think. And yet, there was patriarchs in the Christian religion. The Catholic Church originally after Jesus, and years later after Jesus, maybe 60 years later, when Christianity took root in Rome, and they had the first Christian, whatever they call them, I don't know, councils or whatever they may, back
right.
In the 3rd and 4th century B.C. or 8, no, actually it would have to be after Christ. There was all these decisions made by what they call the Christian patriarchs. They were actually the Christian fathers. So in that term, we could call patriarchs, yes.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm a big fan of Eisler's work, too. I've quoted her often, actually. So when we're talking about core shame, I know my understanding of it goes a lot to what I call, certainly not a term that I coined. It's out there, but the hormadonna complex, which is very much about how I think women have been kind of split into two different camps, and whether you are split in two as an individual or if you are split apart as groups of women, as often happens in the schools. To this day, which just astounds me, and here it is 2012, and pubescent girls in junior high are still trying to figure out who the good girls and bad girls are. And I think that, for me, speaks a lot to women's core shame. But how do you see it?
Well, interestingly enough, more recently in reviewing some research around all of this, I can tell you what I learned, which was new for me. I learned, of course, how originally the whole Garden of Eden myth, the whole snake and Eve and Adam and all of that was originally a goddess myth. Sumerian-based, I think, or Assyrian-based, and it got completely changed by Christian father or patriarchs, the fathers, and they kind of borrowed stuff and changed it around, and they changed it from being the mother, being the creatrix of all life, to getting God to be the father of all life, and woman taking secondary place. And I'm leading to this question, so bear with me for a second. And so having that been established, and then that gets more established, then there's the whole thing about woman causing the downfall of everything, because after all, sex and woman go hand in hand, because just look at her, right? Just look at a woman. She's temptress. She'll tempt man away from God. So there was all that infiltrated. Well, then to compensate could compensate for all of that that happened and the whole fall of humanity at the cause. Woman teased Adam. Adam succumbed. He was weak. And Jesus comes in, right? So here comes Jesus. Excuse me, I'm just using this loosely, and I'm not making anybody wrong about any of this. It's just what I read. So when Jesus was crucified, Adam got redeemed. Humanity got redeemed because he was crucified for the sins of all humanity. But who redeemed Eve? Not until Mary. Not Mary Magdalene, but Mary, his mother, the virgin. Now, they created her to be virgin. Why? Because she had to redeem Eve as the sinner. There we get the Madonna whore.
Right, right. And isn't there also a story about Lilith that ties into the whole Eve story?
Well, I have two different things on Lilith, and I've been doing research because, you know, do you know of a wonderful writer, a great book I highly recommend by Betsy Prelo called The Seductress?
You know, I'm not familiar with that.
You got to read this book, really, Veronica. This is called Seductress, Women Who Ravished the World and Their Lost Art of Love.
I have heard that.
It's an amazing, phenomenal book that is put together by a woman who's a teacher at New York University.
Uh-huh.
Or actually, I think it's that or Columbia, one of the two. I think it's New York. And she composes all women in history, and she takes them apart in sections, and she explores the whole seductress, the whore, seductress, the whole image of how women were put down and demonized and made. And she takes women and shows how they survived through, you know what we're talking about, like the, you know, like your profession, your former profession?
Yes, when
like
I was an escort.
The courtesan or the former profession. Well, this book separates them into women who survived through their wits. They were the seductress from either being like brilliant, right? Or
exactly.
Beautiful. Sexy women who were ugly and had the richest men flail at their feet, you know? So it wasn't about beauty per se. It was about all the arts, how a woman had to survive. But she has amazing stories of women I never heard of and how they conquered the men in the world. They just conquered them with wits, with wile, with humor, with brains, with sex, with everything. They were the lost art of seduction. And they really talks about it from such an amazing way that it was an inspirational book. She has a whole thing on Lilith that she writes, since we're talking about Lilith. And she has it the way the you know, patriarchy per se, causalist. They say, you know, she's the demon. She's the demoness of the highest order. She kind of was the bad girl of everybody, the bad goddess, the bad girl, you know, because she got a bad rap, basically. She was really original. She was the original woman with Adam. And because she did not want to be supine and be second to Adam and sleep under him, this is a, you know, she said no to God. She said, no, I'm equal to Adam. I will not, you know, be his helpmate. And God got pissed, or she got pissed, and she left Eden. She left. She just flew away and went to copulate with the demons, where she had a gay old time.
And my friend Cozy Fabian, when she tells this story, says she copulated with demons, presumably in any position she wished.
Exactly. And it even gets better than that. She says she became the anti-type of the divine life force and became known as the Deathbringer incarnate after she made a deal with the angels who came to stop her lasciviousness. She was out cavorting around with everything and everyone. And to put a stop to her, the angels were sent, and she agreed to stop if she could plague mankind for eternity. Nothing is sweeter than revenge, which is what Lilith did in a way. To get back at God for not being seen as Adam's equal, she became the eternal bad girl that had no regret for any of her acts. She prowled through the night and throttled children after playing with them. She infested men's dreams so they spilled their seed of life, and she killed them with her kisses.
Yes. She's very powerful. Very, very powerful woman.
Pretty powerful. And then, you know, what happens in a culture is we demonize her. We make the bad girl bad. Really, she was really the bad girl of bad girls. And we make that into an archetype, right?
Absolutely.
And then there's a split between the good girl and the bad girl, because Eve then becomes the ideal good girl, more or less. Don't you think?
Well, and the good girl is what? She's inferior to man. She's a little bit stupid, easily fooled. I mean, the stake fools her, right? I mean, the contrast between Lilith and Eve is just like night and day.
And then,
of course, Eve is punished. She's punished for the fall of man, you know, so that the Bible basically sentences her to, you know, bear her children with pain, you know, in travail.
Well, you know, Eve was considered to be lustful. She was considered to be, women were considered to not have any souls. They were only there to serve man. And she was actually someone, they always thought of woman as being guileful. She was wily. She was someone that you had to watch out for. And in terms of her innocence, but she lost her innocence because she was curious about her sexuality. And so by eating of the apple, or the knowledge of sex, basically, the serpent and all that is sex, she then becomes demonized even. So actually, Eve isn't really the good girl either. Let's just take a real look at this again. I don't know.
Really?
You know, the only good girl was Mary, because she never had sex. That was it. Mary is it. The Virgin Mary is the good girl.
Okay. And she is held up as being the ultimate female role model.
She is, you know? Especially in Western civilization, because of Christianity having the root of where it all got started. She is actually, yes, that is the truth. She is the ultimate woman. She is the one we're supposed to emulate.
And it puts so much pressure on women. I mean, first of all, of course, real live women have to have sex before they can get pregnant, and so there's this horrible tension between wanting to have sex in order to be pregnant and have a baby, and then feeling that sex somehow or another makes you inferior or fallen, and a lot of women have gotten pregnant, had a baby, and then basically ceased to have sex because it was, in a lot of ways, it almost feels like they're trying to become virgins again.
That is actually interesting. It's true, isn't it? Women do. Some women do. They will have babies, and then after that, they stop having sex because of something that they feel it's like the distaste of sex, you know? Like,
well,
they've done their duty.
They feel like it's antithetical to the ultimate role model of being a mother. I mean, in order to be a good mother, you're supposed to be asexual or non-sexual, and it's so sad because you can't become a mother without being sexual.
Exactly. But of course, in the eyes of, you know, if you're Catholic and you know, or yeah, if you look at the Virgin Mary, you then are thinking that, you know, you have to emulate some ideal that was made up for you, that wasn't even made up by women, it was made up by men, because they didn't even like sex. Sex was actually at the core root of all of the shame. Was that, this I read, this blew my mind. It was like an awakening I did not want to have, but actually printed by St. Augustine, he actually said that it was actually sex, the act of penetration, the act of a penis going inside a vagina, that was the root of all evil on the planet and of all humanity, that being born itself, because you had to have actual penetration, was evil. And there was no redemption except through Christ's death or through the Virgin Mary.
You know, it's utterly appalling to hear
it's
something
ridiculous.
Like that. But it's also amazing, utterly amazing to me how sex has become, well, you know, people talk about sex as if it's one of the dirtier, you know, more problematic aspects. Instead of being celebrated as one of the more joyful, beautiful aspects of life. And it's amazing to me that our culture, and when I talk about our culture, I'm really talking about the entire planet, but especially Western culture, certainly not specific to the United States, although I think we kind of take it to extreme levels here. But the whole idea that violence is to be preferred, and I actually traveled to a country in Indonesia called Papua New Guinea years ago, and we were admonished that women and men were not supposed to touch each other in public, especially if they were not supposed to hold hands or kiss. However, it was okay if we hit each other.
No.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, it was the actual instructions from the travel guide.
No. Wait a minute.
It's crazy, absolutely crazy, and I look even into American culture, and I see a lot of times, you know, sex workers are put in jail for providing orgasms, and you know, people who carry out the business of the state, and I understand we need law enforcement, and we even need soldiers, but you know, regardless of where you weigh in on that particular part of government, we do give out awards to people in uniform, men and women who wear uniforms and might, you know, take a life in the line of duty. We usually give them, you know, merits of valor and courage and things like that. But we have no way of acknowledging the beauty in giving another human person an orgasm, except to inculcate it with shame, or to perhaps put people in jail.
Is that? I know it's kind of actually. We look and we talk about these things. It's rather shocking. It's just rather shocking, and we accept it as the norm. And it's rather shocking. You know, getting back to what you talked about, what's going on, like in schools right now, and the way the whole whore Madonna complex is still very alive and well. Well, you know, I used to think that it was getting better in schools, and then I read books on what was really going on, especially for young girls. I mean, it's bad for boys. It really is. But it's you know, very especially bad for young girls because, you know, they're looked as sex objects. And that whole objectification of sex is all about that shame. It's all about sex as being separate from our natural way of being, right?
Yes, yes, yeah. And that sex will separate you from your spirituality and drive a wedge between you and the divine. I find that to be such a repugnant thought and so completely opposite of anything I know to be true. And I know you are an ordained minister. Certainly you must have something to say about the whole idea about spirituality and sexuality.
Well, I'm a very alternative ordained minister, so.
Thank God.
I mean, it's all metaphysical, and even in my metaphysical training, always sex and spirit went as one, and is studying Tantra, Tantra meaning sacred sexuality, bringing sex and spirit together and uniting them together, weaving them together. That's where I really would feel, you know, that we look at ancient India before it got again taken over by the Aryans, and we see all of the temples with all of the making love by all the gods and goddesses, and lovemaking was part of the temple rites. And you notice the, and I'm sure you're aware, you know, the great yoni, the mother goddess, and the juices, the elixir of the Amrita was considered to be life-giving and immortal. And then they even had the phalluses worshipped, and they had cults of, you know, phallus worship, and they had cults of, you know, yoni worship, yoni meaning the woman's sacred space or her vagina, her womb. So How it all got warped and twisted, well, we can see, you know, and in this culture especially, I feel so, when I, you know, learning about young girls, I feel so like my heart goes out that we can have some sort of sex positivity in a really good way, showing sex as being held in a whole other consciousness, a whole other way of looking at our sexuality and really loving our bodies and loving the fact that we can have pleasure. And you know, Veronica, women have an ultimate amazing amount of pleasure that we can receive.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, men are, you know, they're capable of having just about every type of sexual pleasure women are. Unfortunately, they've been trained away from that. Also, you know, the Islamic traditions actually believe that God created 10 parts of desire and gave only one of them to man.
Okay, that's true.
It's kind of funny. I think that's why they locked them up in harems.
Yeah, I think so. You know, the whole thing was more or less that this is the whole thing, and I don't want to say this in a, you know, like in a ooh kind of conspiracy sort of way, but if you look at the whole story of how the religious Christian, and the reason I say Christian religion is because there's one book that Barbara Walker wrote in 2000 that really focuses on the whole Western Christian religion and how it completely brought the fall of woman down. It brought woman down. It's Restoring the Goddess. It's a book on restoring the goddess, but she has to go into what happened originally. If we look at all of that was about women. The power of being in a woman's body, the power of being a woman, the power of sexuality, the power of creation, the power that women, and not power over, and not power against, and not in competition with men, but just that women were powerful.
Right.
Well, period.
The very idea that women are powerful, or even that women have a powerful sex drive,
exactly.
It's all quite novel.
And you know, prior to all of that, there were a lot of cultures and societies that lived very, very partnership oriented. Women and men both shared many roles. So there were societies that existed that were very much more agriculturally based, but still. And I think now we're moving to what do you think? I think now we're moving more into real partnership based, but in a whole other way. I think the new culture and the new world is something going to be even much better than what we've had in the past.
Well, it's certainly time, and I certainly hope that that's the case. I think that we are going to have to see more activity with the males, however. I'm really concerned about what's happening with men because they seem to be disappearing. They are not making it into college. They're not graduating from college, and they're not getting promoted to some of the upper echelon jobs. In a lot of ways, women are actually starting to take over in both college and white collar jobs, which is great for women, but it's not great news for all of us. And, you know, I think that both men and women need to thrive for the world to thrive. I really do.
That's true. I read an article that was written by a woman who wrote it for some major newspaper or magazine talking about what you just said. And I was not aware of all of that until then. I didn't know that women were sort of overriding, you know, taking over the whole white collar market, and that men were feeling more and more like they couldn't compete. And they were dropping out, more likely to drop out of high school, more likely to not get, you know, to do blue collar jobs. Not even that. Even those were diminishing because women were even coming into those. So I agree. I think that's it's a little bit something to, you know, maybe we can do some. I don't know what can be done about that. But I think there's something, obviously, that we can learn from all of this to try to shift.
Well, one of the things that I hope to do is we're forging, you know, the idea of an ideal feminine, and obviously, I hope the ideal feminine is creating all kinds of choice and diversity, so that all the beautiful different ways that there are to be a female on this planet will be embraced and encouraged. And while we're doing that, to also be looking for ways in which that supports the male identity, because I think so far what we've seen is that there is this unhealthy competition between the genders. So, you know, when we talk about powerful goddesses and goddess cultures, I'm hoping that we can create a reality that's embracing males and inviting them to participate.
Well, you know, I actually like a lot of Barbara Marx Hubbard, who is, you know, one of the most, I think, leading evolutionists in our time. I guess that's what she calls herself. But, you know, when I think of creating something different in a newer paradigm, I agree with what you're saying. And I think also it's just, I think, raising young boys to step out of the old way in which we look at men and what men's roles are, and raising young girls to step out of the way in which we have been raising young girls, and still having, you know, the separation, I think that somehow if both boys and girls and men, if we can start when they're younger to really give them a different sense of what's values, the values of who they are as human beings, you know,
and make
it more so it's really a partnership here. Like, men and women can do similar kinds of jobs, or we can create new jobs or new ways and new things that we're going to need. And there's not that sense of competition in the way that it competes against each other so much. But in other words, we come more into seeing the value for each of us, the value for men, the value for women, that we don't have to make women more important or men more important or any of that. It's just, what can we do to create it so that young men, boys, can get a sense of who they really are there, what their contribution could be as human beings, you know? I think it's just stepping away from the gender identification and stepping more into we are the what they call like homo spiritus. We are coming from the spirit human place together.
Absolutely, a wholeness. And my background is actually in queer politics, because I came out as a bisexual female back in, I guess it was 1989, 1990, something like that. Back when it was not fashionable and Madonna and Britney Spears weren't swapping spit on stage. my idea of femininity is incredibly broad and inclusive. And really embraces a lot of androgyny, and I'm very comfortable with androgyny. I think it's beautiful, you know, when people move into the spaces that work best for them, and if people really are authentically grounded in who they are, in their wholeness, I think that is, you know, just the most powerful, sexy there is going. Because, you know, it really does infuse you with a lot of confidence, and that is power, and that's very sexy. But, unfortunately, a lot of us are trying to aspire to a particular role or expectation, and so it's like we put on an identity that doesn't really fit who we are. It doesn't speak to our core,
you know.
And then we're oftentimes feeling like we're only half of a person, that we're not whole, and we're looking for this other person to complete us. And oftentimes that is about, you know, finding those aspects of ourselves that we have not been able to fully realize, whether as men or as women. And we try to find that in the other.
And I think that's definitely, of course, true. And I know we see that everywhere, and we may have even had our own experience of doing that. But when we look at us, you know, like the United States, or we look at Western civilization, we're actually rather young.
Yeah.
How I've always looked at United States sexuality, and I still do, and I unfortunately don't know if we've really matured that much. I think we were pretty much teenagers when I was selling sex toys back in the 90s. And or even early 90s, I don't know, or late, actually it was in the 80s I was selling sex toys and doing sex parties for women. And the thing I noticed about the whole thing was how young, and even to this day, that the culture seems to be still somewhere stuck in their 17, 18-year-old or 16-year-old, or somehow there's a stuckness about how we see everything. It's like we're still not maturing enough, you know? So these identities or roles and having to look this way or be that way or be a girl or be a whatever identification we're trying to do is still very young. And I think we have a lot, we still have so much more to learn in this whole area.
You know, I think I see what you're saying. We're kind of an adolescent culture.
Yes, we're an adolescent. That's the word I was thinking. Adolescent culture. And we maybe we're getting into college. I don't know. Or we're stuck in college somewhere.
Something like that, huh? Now, when you say we're an adolescent culture, are you talking about the planetary culture or the United States in particular?
I can speak only for cultures I know and I live in. And I live in the United States. And when I did those things, they were in the U.S. But let me tell you, they haven't changed a whole lot. You know, I had 40-year-old women who I would do a sex toy party for. And this was an education, right? They would learn all about sex toys. They'd learn about how to use them. Then we'd have a stripper come out. These women could barely even say anything about sex. They would giggle. It was like talking to a group of teenagers, and these were 45-year-old women.
You're kind of referring, I think, to the embarrassment and the giddiness.
Yeah, and the whole lack of, it's very adolescent behavior.
Yeah.
It's very adolescent behavior.
It seems to me like people have a really hard time focusing on sex as if it were a serious topic or an important topic. It becomes just like an embarrassing thing, like passing gas.
Yeah, so if there's a shame or an embarrassment or something about being very forthright. Now, you and I and the people that I have been associated with for the last 25 years, I mean, sex, we were talking, every other sentence was, in fact, it got to the point where I just couldn't stand it anymore. Every time I talked to someone, it'd always be sex would be in the conversation. You know, it was a very normal, in my world, topic. Hang out with sexual healers, sexual workers. You hang out with people who are sex educators, and sex is not a big thing anymore to talk about. In fact, we talk about it all the time.
Well, and in the context of life, not like it's outside of life, not like it's separate from life, not like it's, a shameful thing, but not like it's something that we're obsessed about either. It's just a normal part of life.
Exactly.
And a very beautiful part of life.
Exactly. So I think, you know, I've been sort of sheltered in that, so that when I go into places where that is not the normal conversation. In fact, it's not even brought up. And that if you do mention sex, it's with giggles or it's with hush-hush tones or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe it's like very brazen, you know, and we use curse words and we defame. We make it more, what is it when I say you defame? You either talk about sex too much and it's very brazen and out there, but it's not really in an honoring way, or we don't talk about it. So we either overly doing it or we're not doing it at all. Maybe we're hiding it.
Yes. And it's, you know, as a sexologist, I'm in a small community, Nevada City here. And one of the things that astounds me is how, how closeted people are about their sexuality, their gender identity, their sexual practices. And then I find out that there is actually quite a bit of sex going on. and a lot of diversity, and I'm just delighted to know that. And at the same time, fascinated with how creative people have to be to try to kind of keep up the facade that they are something other than what they are.
Isn't that interesting? So you really never know when you meet somebody. You really don't. I mean, they can look at whatever, think you can look at them and think they're Miss Straight or Mr. Straight, or that they're very conservative or whatever, but you never really know what's under the surface until you really get to know somebody.
And also, I just think there's such a large amount of people's energy going to trying to
cover it up.
To try to try to cover it up. And it's sad to me because a lot of times the couples that I work with don't even know how to talk to each other about sex. And that can be a real problem. You know, they might have been married 10, 20 years and they've never had a conversation about what they like, what they don't like, what's working for them, what's not working for them.
That's actually very sad.
Yeah. Well, what about you now? You work with clients. You do soul mentoring. What kind of issues do you encounter?
Well, you know, I haven't been doing that as much. I did it for a long time. Soul mentoring, I've been as a minister, ordained minister, I've been a spiritual counselor for 25 to 30 years. It's been my natural gift, one of my things that I love to do. And what I do is, because I'm metaphysically based, and I specifically mean metaphysical, I don't mean astrology or psychic. I mean really dealing with spirit. I've been a channel for spirit. And I don't channel for others. I help others to connect with their own higher self or their I am presence. And I do it in such a natural way, in a way that you can know who and what and how and feel totally in self-authority. And so I'm also an Akashic Record reader. So I'm trained to go into someone's Akashic Records. And when I'm in, and the Akashic Records is like the library of everybody's karmic everything, and anything you've ever thought, everything you've ever done is recorded in what we call this library that actually lives on a different dimensional field. So if we're on the third dimension, imagine that this library lives on the 12th dimension. And in the Bible, they call it the Book of Knowledge. And by accessing the Book of Knowledge and my ability to go in there, and it's not necessarily difficult to learn to do it, but I happen to be able to do it very easily, and I did get trained to do it. You can access information, and you can hear what your soul has to say, and you can be more available to that still presence of really listening. What is the reason that this was created in my life? So I help people by using their records, by going into getting underneath the story, like the core issues, and working with helping people to see the truth of their true self, you know, and learning soul lessons and learning why we have certain people in our lives and learning all those things that we do as a spiritually evolving person. So it's really about spiritual evolution or soul evolution. I almost call myself a soul evolution coach, you know?
Mm. Absolutely.
It really is that. I mean, you know, I have someone that I work with and we work with each other. And I feel that we all need people like that at this time in our life. I think having, you know, to me, I don't know. I don't think I could ever be in the world anymore and not know that I could have these kinds of support systems in place. I really feel it's very valuable to have someone you can do on these deeper levels of your being work with.
And what does soul mentoring mean? What's that entail?
Well, if I was a mentor for somebody, you know, mentor is someone that you look up to sort of help. Or they, you know, so I'm, as a soul mentor, I'm helping your soul. I'm mentoring the soul. Mentoring your soul into more of its full awareness of its true self. So we're growing together. We're helping to evolve the soul's evolution, really. And that's an ongoing process because, you know, at least in my belief world, my system, your body may die eventually, but your soul doesn't. It goes on to the next. If we believe in incarnations, it goes on to the next incarnation until maybe you don't incarnate again, which can be true for some. So you're coming back to learn more about how to be in this world. Well, especially here on planet Earth, we're learning humanness. We're learning how to be really more spirit in bodies. So I just am like a guide, like a spiritual counselor. You know, if I use those terms, I'd say spiritual counselor, spiritual guide, soul mentor, midwife to the soul. Any of those terms are all very similar.
And how do people contact you? Work with them over the phone or?
I do phone. I can do Akashic Record readings. I can do everything. I do everything over the phone. And they can either, Actually, the women's mysteries, I actually have soul mentoring connected to women's mysteries. So right now, it's not its own separate website. It's sort of connected. And what you would do is you would do, www.womensmysteries.org, and then you'd have a backslash or forward slash, and it would say Akashic, like capital A, Akashic.html. And that would take you to soul mentoring. It would actually take you to what's called soul support. And if you put my name in Luminessa and Jara, you probably find it that way too. You could see my website that way too. But, you know, it's connected in through the Women's Mystery site at this time.
Okay. All right. So now, can we, I'm looking at the clock. This conversation has gone so fast because, of course, you and I just, you know, we're very passionate about this topic. But I want to make sure that our listeners know how to sign up for Women Talking Sex. So can you tell them a little bit about that and why they want to sign up for it?
Sure. So for people who, if you're someone that has really wanted to hear more about sexuality, and specifically women's sexuality, like you're a woman maybe, or a man, who's interested in knowing more about well, a topic could be, you know, on expanded orgasms. We had Dr. Patty Taylor on last month, and we talked all about, some people don't even know what is an expanded orgasm, or they didn't even know there was such a thing called an expanded orgasm. So if you want to know about things that you've never heard of, you want to know about your own body, maybe you would like to learn more about hormones, or maybe you'd like to learn more. You're a woman who's just gone through menopause and your sex drive has sort of dipped, or maybe you have a huge sex drive and you don't even know what to do about it now. So these are kinds of things. We want to encourage women to listen and to invite questions and to tell us things that they would like to know about, so that you can get informed, you can be educated, you can have a place, a forum, where you can actually have a conversation or be a part of a conversation that we do on our program. And we talk about all kinds of topics. They're not limited, including relationships, communication, not just bedroom topics, but anything that can pertain to you as a woman. And we say Women Talking Sex because that topic has been so taboo, and it's been, I think this is giving women a real chance to tune into something that they may not ever talk about even with their friends anymore. You know, where do they go? What do you do if you have a question? You know, so we're just opening up the whole dialogue to talk about sex, you know, and make it a conversation. And we'll have tantra teachers and sexual healers and medical doctors and people like Veronica, who are sexologists and sexicologists, and all kinds of people that will come on the show. And hopefully you'll get questions answered. Hopefully you'll get information and knowledge. And hopefully you'll find a way also to have a conversation with your friends and be more forthcoming.
Well, and I certainly know that they're going to get a lot of information if they tune into my interview, but I have no doubt that that's the case for all the people that you're interviewing. You're interviewing a fine lineup of people, and I know you recently had Francesca Gentile, which is a very good friend and colleague of mine, as a part of this as well. And, and you are the first and the only, are you not, Women Talking Sex? I mean, I don't think there's any other telesummits that are of the same.
We are
topic.
The first and only, and we're still, you know, we're growing. And actually, I'll tell you something that's real exciting, Veronica, that we're looking for and wanting. We're going to expand really quickly because we find that we want to serve in a greater way than just as a conference. We feel like that's a great idea, and we're so happy we're getting to do that. But we want to actually expand it, and you'll even be interested in this. We want to actually have it be a resource center for women. We actually want Women Talking Sex to be the resource center for women regarding sexuality for women. And
fabulous.
It will have so the conference will be always there. But in addition to the conference, we're going to have it be so that we're going to have a resource network and a directory, so that professionals who want to come on and they want to list on the directory for a really nominal amount will be able to be listed according to their specialty. And women who want to come on and find someone to work with will be able to do that. We'll refer them. We'll be able to have a way that in one place you can have chat rooms, you can meet other women. We're also going to have online group coaching for women. So classes,
wonderful.
Coaching. Yeah. And people like yourself might want to offer things like that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm all over that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we want to make it a real resource and a way to reach out to community all over the world and make it available for everybody.
And don't you think that helping women to start talking about sex is going to be really the next step in,
yes,
in truly empowering women and helping women to move into their fullness and their joy?
That is exactly the next step. It's coming out of the closet, literally, and beginning to make sex a conversation that is not just done behind closed doors anymore or in a small, tight group of your girlfriends, but rather a conversation that is natural, and I won't say normal because what is normal, but natural, that we start to make sex a natural part of our lives, you know? And I think that it will do that. I think it helps to demystify. You know, it's one of the things is when we make things all mystical and we make it bigger than it is. If we can just demystify some of this stuff and some of these topics, talk about vaginas, you know, talk about clitorises, talk about,
yeah,
all of these things, you know. Hey, look.
Absolutely.
Eve and Ensler, how long to get vagina monologues accepted?
Oh, I know. And Betty Dodson was disappointed that she wasn't talking about clitorises.
Hey, the thing that I created, it's not my, I didn't create it. I would say that it came to me, but it seems like it came to other women. So I figured from Eve Ensler to vagina monologues, I'm doing Yoni Speak.
I love it.
Right.
Yoni Speak. Absolutely.
Yoni Speak. My mission in life, one of them through the School of Women's Mysteries, you don't know this, but this is one of my missions, is to make the yoni worldwidely accepted, that we are now reclaiming our yonis, and we're doing Yoni Speak, and we have, what is it I have? This is something I may put on a t-shirt, and it's just that I like it. It's, now, I'm not saying anything wrong with the word pussy, because we had to reclaim pussy, right? We reclaimed cunt. We're reclaiming pussy, and now we're going to go to yoni. So I put pussies are passé, yonis are in.
That's cute.
Isn't that cute? I think it's cute.
Oh, I like it. I have a friend, Anathea Fabricius, who uses the word yoni. As a matter of fact, she's developed something called the Yoni Hugger. You'll have to have her on Women Talking Sex.
I would love right. to. You have to send me her info.
I will.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe it, but we have to get off the air. Luminessa, I'm so glad that you and I are going to be doing this more often because I really just, you know, found a kindred spirit in you, and I know we're going to have a wonderful time shifting the paradigm for women and hopefully men, for all of us, so we can be more sex positive.
I think that women will bring their men in.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what
I mean,
want.
After all, you know, a lot of women are having sex with men.
And so other...
It always stands to reason.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, you're a total delight. And thank you so much. Thank you for bringing your joy and your openness to the shame-free zone. It's just been wonderful.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good night, Luminessa.
Good night.
And to my listeners, of course, we will be back here again next Monday. And at that time, I'm going to be interviewing Johannina Wyckoff, and we'll be talking about Tantra. So tune in then.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian.